Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass. Joining me,
Beakless Mountaineer. And joining us remotely,
from Florida, Mark Edge. I'm thinking about this idea that you can't cuss on the radio. And look, I'm not trying to cuss on Free Talk Live.
Sure, well, as you know, we are in favor of it. We love the FCC, and we want their boot pressed firmer against everyone's throat.
But what I was thinking was, how many kids are listening to radio right
all
now?
Of them. All of them. Every single one of them.
If you're it depends on your definition of kids. Mark, you and I are both Gen X. So, like, to me, a kid could be anyone, like, 40 or under.
Sure. I'm thinking of somebody 12 and under.
All right.
Somebody who, if they heard a cuss word, would be surprised. Maybe, right? Like, there's little old ladies out there that would hear the cuss word.
Yeah.
And they may be upset about hearing it, but... let's be clear, they've heard the word before.
Well, I don't think that's the purpose of the, you know, I'm going to play devil's advocate on this.
Okay,
you know,
let's
I'm going to steel man the opposition
sure.
on this.
Okay.
Now, I don't think that they're trying to, they're like, oh no, if no one ever says the F word, then no one will ever learn it and we will live in a better society. No, I don't think that's the plan. I don't think that they're trying to protect 12-year-olds that would be surprised. I think that what they're trying to do is, so when you cuss... it activates the center of the brain, the like reptilian complex, the part of your brain that goes, do I need to punch something or run away? And I think what they're trying to do in the same way is like, okay, they don't want a certain level of sexuality on billboards is to protect people who are not agreeing to it and not ready for it from having the most powerful
levels
activated.
That is such a preposterous, like, supposed position for government to take. Thank you, devil, and your advocation. the fact of the matter is multiple studies have been done, and the truth is out there, as the X-Files liked to say back in the day, that cussing has never caused any harm to any person or property outside of a little emotional butthurt.
Well, it's the emotional butthurt.
Well, right.
But seriously, weirdly enough, if I
insult your mother, I can do a better job doing that with an eloquent insult than I ever could with cuss words.
Well, so here's the thing. This is the same thing as all of the woke diversity, equity, inclusion nonsense. It's the same thing on the other side of the aisle. It's that same social control. I have a right not to have my feelings hurt. It's just a different aesthetic that's being applied.
There's this social illusion, and that's the only thing I can refer to it as. And it's kind of the same social illusion that has people believing that government is necessary, right? But there's this social illusion that if you're around children and you say the F word, that like somebody is going to be like, hey, there's children around here.
Yeah.
They're gonna look at you like with, you know, the look of scorn, raise an eyebrow at you or whatever, because you said the F word in front of some children. But the reality is that none of these children have ever been harmed by another human being going, you know, I don't know what the FCC is going on around here.
Well, the point is that children will always get brought up when you talk about cussing. And the point I'm trying to make is that kids are on TikTok and they're hearing cuss words and they're seeing big old gelatinous breasts bounce around, and they're doing everything that we cannot do here on the radio.
Right. Yeah.
We have no breasts to bounce around on this particular show.
Let alone gelatinous ones.
Right.
I'm all for all of them.
welcome all of them. it's just so silly. Who are we protecting at this point? I just don't know. You're right. We're protecting delicate Republican snowflakes.
Well, and like it is really the passing of the guard at this point, right? Because it used to be mainstream for people to like be on board with the no cussing thing and like the, you know, super conservative, you know, look and feel of, well, all media. I'm old enough to recall as a child, somewhere between, 4 and 8 years old, right? I recall seeing a Playtex Cross Your Heart Bra commercial on television. And my grandparents were like upset. Mm. Right? At least my grandmother was. She's like, I can't believe they're showing such filth
and
on television, like during like the soap opera she was trying to watch. Yeah. No, seriously. Like, I'm not even kidding you.
How
like,
dare they show you a woman's body in between stories about what they do with them?
There was a time that since I've been alive where like that was frowned upon, showing a woman wearing a bra in a commercial for bras. Some people would have you think that it's far better for your children to be playing Monopoly, the board game, mm-hmm. than it is for them to be playing Call of Duty, the video game, right? And, like, I mean, maybe those are two different games, but, like, if there's a online version of Monopoly that you can play with a group of people, why wouldn't you? Like, oh, you mean I can play with, you know, some guy in China and another guy in Afghanistan and another guy in Uruguay?
And it's a lot easier when you don't have to deal out the money and play with the hotels and all that stuff. It's a lot easier to play the game.
Well, and I'm just saying,
I don't know, man. There's no bribing the banker that way, you know.
How about
risk? It's hard to make secret alliances against people.
No, you want to play Axis and Allies is what you want to play if you want to get that. You know,
somebody needs to teach me. I have the boxed set here and don't know how to play.
You don't know how to play Axis and Allies?
I don't.
Okay, well, the next time you're here for more than a couple of days in a row, we'll play. Because it takes that long to play this game. Like, you don't just start a game of Axis and Allies and you're done in like an hour and a half, 2 hours. No.
Yeah, that was my thought when you're like, why wouldn't you play Monopoly with these people from around the world? It's like, are you kidding me?
Well,
like, the investment of time and energy, that's like a family level of investment in relationship.
If you're familiar with the investment level to play Monopoly as far as time,
mm-hmm.
Axis and Allies requires at least double that.
Oh, at least.
At least, if not four times that.
Yeah.
So it's more of an intergenerational game then.
I don't know. It's at least...
We Hatfields have been playing this game of Axis and Allies against the McCoys.
And I used to play way back in the day, like once a week for, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours. But like it was one game. Right. So we'd started the game. We'd play for, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours, whatever it was. And we'd leave the game where it was. And then we'd come back a week later. The game would still be where it was. And we would continue same game.
Wow.
Right. You know, after that for another 4 or 5 hours. And then like, oh, no, it's still not done. We'll wait till the next week and we'll come back. Right. So it was just like, I don't know. It was like watching the zombie TV show that's popular?
Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead. Yeah, it's just like, oh, to be continued next week.
They did such a terrible job with
that. We would come back the next week, and we'd be like, previously on Axis and Allies, you know, Bob over here became the Germans, and so, of course, he took on two fronts simultaneously, or whatever, right? You know, we'd recap whatever the hell happened, you know, recap who's got what as far as, you know, all of the munitions and the plants to build bombs and all that kind of stuff, because that's what you're really
there's only one game that I've, well, one kind of game, rather, that I've ever had that kind of patience for, and it's role-playing games. And that like interactive
that
storytelling.
That goes on much longer than that.
Yeah,
role-playing games can go on months, years.
Yeah, yeah, and and that is worth it for me just because there's an open-endedness to it and a creative possibility that doesn't exist when, like, you know, there's a set of rules on the back of the board.
Again, I'm super glad.
When I was young, you know, obviously I played Dungeons & Dragons, enjoyed it very much, but I was into it back when, you know, I was like 11 or 12, and I bought the books and everything. And, of course, when I was 11 or 12, I had 11 or 12-year-old friends. And they're not so good at being dungeon masters. Everybody wants to be a fighter. Not everybody wants to be a dungeon master. So what we kind of did with each other was we'd get out the monster manual and, you know, roll a dice for the page and then, you know, just kind of pick a random monster off the page that we, you know, chose and then have the other person fight it. And then we go back and forth and, you know, we kind of did it that way. It was a really lame version of Dungeons and Dragons, but we enjoyed it.
And this is what we did when there were no video games.
Right. Right. Indeed. What else would we do?
So I'm really glad that you brought up vernacular, if you will, or nomenclature, which is a synonym for vernacular.
Nomenclature.
I love both of those words because, well, they're multisyllabic and they mean words.
Mm.
Right. Literally. Nomenclature just means words. vernacular just means words. They're slightly different in that one is about like specific like a trade, for example. Like if you're a welder, you need to know what MIG and TIG are, right? That's metal inert gas and tungsten inert gas, right? They're two
kind of hard not to are kind of hard to get trained in those if you haven't, you know, figured out what they are.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when you go into any you know, sort of specific niche, whether it's a market, whether it's a skill set you're trying to acquire, there's terminology that you need to learn.
And the weird thing that I found about academia in general is almost every single subject is primarily vocabulary.
This is from Mises.org. You guys are both familiar with Mises Institute, I'm sure. The headline, price inflation comes from government, not from excuseflation or greedflation. Now, these are two words that I had never heard until reading the headline of this article. But
why, that sounds like malinformation, Captain.
Information that's from my Mal?
It's my favorite new word that, what you said is true, but it goes against our narrative. And that means you're being deceitful with your truth, unlike us.
Deceitful with your truth.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, malinformation. But yeah, what you're saying is true, but we don't like it.
Followers of the Austrian School of Economics know that the term inflation refers to the increasing of the quantity of money or money substitutes, the result being a rise in the price of goods and services or a fall in the value of money. But in the modern era, the rise in prices is called inflation. And as Ludwig von Mises wrote, this semantic innovation is by no means harmless. The semantic change has people looking everywhere but where they should to blame for higher prices. Now, if you're more than if you're more than 15 years old, you've probably noticed things have gotten more expensive dollar for dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It used to cost you $1.25 to get yourself a Coca-Cola in the old machine, or now it's $2.50.
We used to have dollar stores that were dollar stores.
Right.
Like now they're $1.25 stores that are slowly but surely shifting to, well, they're just low price stores.
Yeah, they're going
to
be $5 stores.
$5 stores.
It has a $5 aisle already.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the future.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that $5 aisle is just going to expand slowly but surely.
Don't call me Shirley. Bloomberg's Edna Curran writes, a prolonged period of elevated inflation has left consumers cranky and eager to cast blame. Of course, when prices of whatever the stuff it is you buy on a daily basis go up, you get cranky. Huh, who would have figured? With the term inflation evidently getting tiresome, Curran lists some new price increase buzzwords and phrases.
Ooh.
Yes, that's right. We're going to learn about these words tonight.
Because if we just have different ways of describing the way that we're getting screwed, it'll be less bad.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. I'm taking off my sweater and my slippers, and we're going to learn us some vernacular.
Right. And this is what it all comes down to is that those that love government, more government, constantly are using words in a way to describe things differently than they have been described in the past.
Or than they actually are.
Mm-hmm.
They'll go so far as to say that using the terminology that you used in the past is hateful or racist or exclusionary or whatever term that they'll use.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what happened to inflation long before any of this other stuff.
Yeah, right. Well, and weirdly enough, this is actually quite similar to the whole, like, using money, right? So you have no idea what the back of your monetary system looks like at all, but you know how to use it. You can swipe your card and bam, I've got my gas.
Or pull out some greenbacks out of your wallet or whatever.
Right, right. In the same way, people don't care about language except, you know, weirdos like us. So when we come across a word like inflation, like we have a mental image. We're like, okay, a balloon blows up. Okay, what is getting inflated?
Right.
So when we come across a word, we're like, well, wait a second. This has got to work with my other use of this word. Like, what's getting inflated? Whereas normal people who are not interested in language, they just use it the way it is used around them. And weirdly enough, so inflation only applies to prices, and deflation only applies to property values.
Yeah, that is weird. And also, folks who are longtime listeners know that I, Captain Kickass, am a fan of a particular variety of word, and that is the portmanteau. That is when you take one word and another word and combine it together to make a new and more efficient version of both words together. I'll give you the best example I could possibly give you, and that is technical difficulties is now technicalties.
It's been quite a love affair.
And that's, you know, and I have more of those, but that's my favorite one. So most of these, or at least, you know, a good percentage of them, there's only like a half a dozen here, are also portmanteaus. The one we all know already, shrinkflation. Greedflation.
Greedflation. Did you know that greed was actually recently invented?
No.
A lot of people don't know that.
What do you mean?
Some people think that like greed is just a thing that's always been with us.
I thought that was one of the seven like deadly sins or whatever, like greed and gluttony and all. I think they were fancier
about it and called it like avarice or something. But no, recently invented. Turns out corporations were not as greedy as they are now, which is why we can blame them for being greedy now. Because it wasn't just like a constant like gravity.
Oh, it was just invented recently?
Just invented.
Oh. Mark,
as though people didn't, you know, they do the actions they do in order to get paid. And if, you know, ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't get paid, you wouldn't go to work tomorrow, right? That's how it works.
That is how it works. So greedflation, Miss Curran says, I don't know who Miss Curran is. It's a modern take on profiteering. Well, then why do we need a new word for it? Right? Making an unreasonable profit on the sale of essential goods, especially during times of emergency. Of course, price is how goods are distributed during a shortage or any other time, as opposed to The Economist magazine wrote, something
and
worse.
And to point out, there's always a shortage.
Right. Yeah. Otherwise, there'd be always no demand, right?
Right. And if
there's too many cars sitting on a lot at $30,000, there's a way to get rid of them. It's price them at $25,000.
Right. Yeah.
And if that didn't work, drop them to 20. I mean, there's always a lack of them because somebody will always buy scarce resources.
Yeah.
And I get how this annoys people when it gets to the extremes, but this is how the pricing system works. Like, there's this amount, there's this much demand in this, you know, given availability. So if you want more than that amount because there's a higher demand, then the price has to go up so that new people enter the market, say, hey, I will take advantage of that demand by giving more supply, right, which then brings the price back down.
And
like, I get how this annoys people when what we're talking about is water during a flood.
Right. Yeah.
But that is how you get those bottles of water down there. That's how you pay for the gas to get those thirsty people some water.
Yeah. If I were in the, the New Orleans hurricane and somebody was charging me at $20 for a case of water that I could normally go to the store and buy for like $5 or whatever, right? Like, sure. Yeah. Oh, you got it with you? Yep. Here you go. Premium. You've with you? Yes. Right here to my door. Thank you very much. Right? You know, you have my gratitude and my money, but, you know, that's fine. What I don't like about this particular definition is that it says making an unreasonable profit.
Uh-huh.
Well, who decides that?
Well,
politicians,
the gods
who
in the government,
don't live by profits. Politicians who demand their paycheck at the point of a gun, if necessary, they're the ones who decide exactly what a reasonable profit is. People who hate profit don't know anything about it.
See, a reasonable profit is one where part of it goes into my campaign. And an unreasonable profit is one where I haven't learned how to put them under my thumb yet.
It all comes clear now.
It's very simple.
All right. So moving on to the next one, excuseflation. Like, this is a new one. I'm like, wait, excuseflation? This one sounds like...
I will never excuseflation.
This sounds a lot like the above-mentioned greedflation, current cites a paper by UBS AG chief global economist Paul Donovan, who claims developed economies are in a period when some companies spin a story that convinces customers that price increases are fair when in fact they disguise profit margin expansion. I'm not sure. That sounded like a lot of word salad.
Well, so there's a lot packed into there.
Yeah.
So, like, part of the idea there is that there is this weird, objective, nebulous, what the right price is. And that that's not a thing that is discovered through buying and selling. And then if you you padded that by having more profit, that is evil.
They give an example. They say a baker in Chicago said on a Bloomberg podcast that global news events allow him to raise prices without getting a whole bunch of complaining from the customers.
Well, the fact is he's been holding his prices at a certain rate for a long time while the government's been increasing over time the supply of money. So, you know, he was getting pinched harder and harder, and he had to raise his prices at some point. And yes, it was the global news that allowed his customers, hey, you know, the government's printing money. I guess you're going to have to raise your rates. And the thing that I'd like to point out here is this is the core of the fascist philosophy. I'm not using that terminology flippantly. This is, in fact, what the fascists think. The fascists say, we're going to work with big business to get a reasonable profit so that these big businesses support us and we support them. And this makes the nation stronger. And the one thing that big businesses can agree upon is that no one should be competing with them. So the little guy, the baker in Chicago, never has a chance to compete against Bimbo. Because Bimbo's in with the government. I don't know if everybody else knows that there is a national bakery called Bimbo, but it uses the crap out of me.
This is called Sara Lee.
So far, all of this has just been another example of, no, the economy is great. You just don't understand how great our economy is because you happen to be paying higher prices, you know, at the pump and on your bills and in the grocery store. But we geniuses who've been to Yale and Harvard know that that's not core inflation. See, inflation is where you take out all those prices that are, you know, they're really volatile, yeah, and you literally have no option but to pay them. Those are the prices that don't matter. We have a great economy. You just don't know how to count it.
You know, the only people that tell me that the economy is great would do anything to see Joe Biden reelected.
Fact.
Like, they would do or say anything. Yes, the sky is not blue today. It is a delightful shade of plaid. Like, they would say anything, no matter how ridiculous. Now, I'm not saying that there's not some good indicators in the economy, nor am I saying that the bad economy is Joe Biden's fault or, frankly, the president's fault at all. I think that the Bill Clinton quote is the best one, and I don't have it sitting here in front of me, but it's something to the effect of, it's like congratulating the bull rider on riding the bull. Mm-hmm. The president doesn't have that much to do with the economy, but certainly just spending willy nilly isn't particularly good for it. And you know, calling for the printing of more money, they don't even follow modern monetary theory. Modern monetary theory would have you spending when times are bad, like they are now.
Yep.
And then paying off that debt when times are good. Right. But they never do that.
No, that's Keynesianism. See, now modern monetary theory updated that because we noticed that while Keynesianism...
You called it modern monetary theory first, and now it's the modern monetary theory.
The most modern
yeah, see, you're right. Theory. See, you are correct.
John Maynard Keynes, you know, the greatest economist of all time.
Not.
Like Nobel Prize winning. Now, he taught us how, like, that's exactly what a good economy is where the government spends a bunch of money when things are bad and then, you know, reels it back in and takes in some taxes when times are good. But what he didn't realize is that we need to spend more money all of the time, just all of the time forever.
All right. So let's review. Thus far, we've talked about the word shrinkflation. We've talked about the phrase drip pricing. We've talked about greedflation. And we've also talked about excuseflation. So the next one is seller's inflation. Like, what does that mean? This term is credited to Isabella Weber, an assistant professor of economics at the University of Massive Douches, who claims large corporations have market power and have used supply problems as an opportunity to increase prices and scoop windfall profits. Her solution is price controls, which would, of course, lead to long lines and rationing.
And bloody shortages. That's what happened. Look, if you say the price can't go above a certain amount, and you need to put it above that amount in order to keep producing it, you stop producing it.
If you say, you can't sell a car for more than $30,000, but it costs you $35,000 to produce that car, guess what's happening? That car ain't getting produced.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, the truth of the matter is that these people think that the people who supposedly set these prices are in utter control of them. They're not. They never were. They are doing their best guess to see how much they can price it and it still get bought. But it still getting bought is up to the situation they're in.
The thing that bothers me most about this particular one, seller's inflation, is this term is credited to Isabella Weber, an assistant professor of economics.
Oh, well, that explains it. Yeah, no, all the stuff I've been saying about how, like, yeah, we have all of these, you know, neo-Keynesian like, modern monetary theory.
That's what this is.
Yeah, yeah. So the fact of the matter is, and they've tested this, once you've been educated in economics, you know less about economics than before you were educated in economics. We have tested this.
Yeah.
It is reliable and factual.
Let's move on to disinflation. That's just inflation that insults you while it's at it. It's going to diss you. No, that's not true. Here's what they have to say about disinflation. Prices are rising, but at a lower rate of change.
That one I have heard. That one's a fairly old one.
So isn't that just slower inflation?
Well, yes. Yes.
It's elderly inflation.
And that one tends not to get used very often, and here's why. When that happens, they will call it inflation is coming down.
Right, yeah. Instead of it just slowed a little bit.
Right. What's actually happening is not that inflation is coming down.
Right.
It's that inflation is going up slower.
That's like when a politician says that they've successfully reduced the budget. No. They haven't. They've just successfully reduced the rate of spending that is continuously going up. They just slowed that a little bit.
Right.
And now they're able to claim.
We were going to spend this much money, and we lowered that to spend this much money. It's well more than we have that we're going to bring in, and has been since, well, I don't know, when Bill Clinton was in office, and that was just 1 year. I mean, like, it's... Before that, you'd have to go back to the 50s.
Okay, so this last one in the list here, immaculate disinflation.
Ooh,
yeah,
sounds sexy. What do we got?
Curran says,
sounds like Mary's involved.
It does, doesn't it? Or like somebody just caught some inflation, like out of the blue, like the immaculate reception out of the NFL days. You guys, you guys aren't football people.
No.
Anyway, Curran says that immaculate disinflation is the optimistic notion that Jerome Powell and the economists at the Eccles Building can bring prices under control without putting a bunch of people out of work. The Federal Reserve can either create money fast or create money slow. That's all it has. Jerome Powell is not the economy's Geppetto.
Well, it's not quite all it has. So let me give you an example. The Bank Term Funding Program, which almost nobody knows exists, the BTFP.
The Bank Term Funding Program? Yeah. Is this where they pay people to come up with these new terms so that the banks can get away with absconding our money?
Nope, a little more insidious than that.
All right.
So it was very simply a bailout. But because they called it the Bank Term Funding Program and they did it this way and this way instead of doing it the way that they did in 2008, no one was upset by it. So not only do they have the power to create money and determine how fast they create it, they also have sneaky ways of hiding that they're creating money. And something called jawboning, where they didn't actually change anything, but they talked in a certain way, and that made people act differently.
again, vernacular.
Yeah. So the fact that they are such insanely powerful creatures in this economy means that if they use slightly different wording, the entire economy shifts in preparation for them doing something else, whether or not they're ever going to do that.
Mark?
Sounds right. I'm just listening.
So the article continues. Murray Rothbard explained where inflation comes from everywhere and always. The fault of inflation is not in business monopoly, nor in union agitation, nor in the hunches of speculators, or in the greediness of consumers. The fault is in the legalized counterfeiting operations of the government itself. For the government is the only institution in society with the power to counterfeit, to create new money. So long as it continues to use that power, we will continue to suffer from inflation, even unto a runaway inflation that will utterly destroy the currency itself. Inflation, or whatever you want to call it, is nothing more than government taxation in stealth form. Only governments can conjure up new money from nothing, using it to bid away resources from private individuals.
And I want to explain that. That when we say inflation is theft, the idea that we're trying to get across to you is that if you have a hundred, like you're in this imaginary community that we talked about that has $1 million in it, right? It's a bubble, and that way you can understand it. And then somebody comes along and adds another $1 million to that economy. Now, they didn't create a single new car. They didn't replace a window. They didn't do anything. They just added money. And at some point or another, and not immediately, but at some point, the equilibrium is going to be found again. And there's no more wealth. There's no more cars. There's no more factories. There's no more nothing. There's just more money. And that money is going to be worth half as much. So when the government creates money, they spend it into the marketplace, or their cronies do. And that is how they take your wealth. Right. I do know that this is the most important election of our time, that if we don't pick the right guy, that the wrong guy is going to get in there and we're all going to, I mean, it's going to be another Kristallnacht.
And Mark, I mean, I know you're, I detect a hint of sarcasm there. and I detect that because I'm old enough.
If you don't, then I'm not doing my job.
I'm old enough to know that I think every presidential election has been referred to as the most important election of our lifetime.
What's weird is that's true.
How is that true?
Because the government gets more powerful.
Yeah, but they're going to do that regardless of the outcome of the election.
Right. So whoever gets in has more power than the guy before him. Like, they're not wrong. It's just that it still doesn't matter.
Okay.
But, like, let me give you a great example.
And my point is that it doesn't matter, right? And so go ahead.
Let me give you a great example. Right now, we are teetering on the edge of World War III, and neither of your options are likely to keep us out of it.
No.
Yeah, it right. is the most important election ever, and we're going to lose, because both of your options are going to get us into a world war.
Right, so what you're saying my presumption is what you're saying here is that in one case, the one of the crooked old perverts is going to get us in a war with Russia,
mm-hmm.
and the other crooked old pervert is going to get us in war with China.
And what's great about this, if we get in a war with Russia, China will join Russia against us.
Oh,
and
no, they won't.
Are you kidding me?
Why would they? They're going to just go in there and clean up the mess. They'll take all of...
Because the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Well, largely that, yeah. Because they have significantly stronger trade agreements with them, because they're literally on the cusp of creating a new EU, essentially, with them, the whole, like, BRICS union, because they're currently figuring out how to have a currency together. Like, they are way closer to Russia than the U.S.
The digital socialism, the digital communism that's happening in China, like... It's just insane, man. These people are slaves of a degree humankind has never seen before,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's not like people think, oh, well, you know, the being a slave in, you know, the 1700s in the U.S. or the 1800s, you know, was far worse. Like, no, Because these people have the illusion of autonomy, right? They're able to, they can still go to like a grocery store or a gas station. They can go out to a concert if they can afford it, right? You know, they have this illusion. But when their government decides, no, you can't travel anywhere, right? They're forced to produce something on an app on their magic rectangle, their portable device, and whatever their designation that the government has decided will allow them to either travel or not travel. It's a green or red. That's it. That's how they know they can go past this particular blockade, whether it looks like a turnstile to the subway or if it's a full-on military roadblock, it doesn't matter. They have the technology. They're subjecting these people to it, and they just think it's part of everyday life. They're growing up with it. This next generation of Chinese are growing up with this digital socialism, this digital communism, and they just think it's just how life is.
Well, that's how you keep the flu from spreading, don't you know?
Gigi in South Carolina, you're on Free Talk Live.
Your secret passion, who's not a secret anymore, according to Richie.
Oh, that's right. I forgot to announce that. This is Gigi, my secret crush, calling on Free
there
Talk
you
Live.
Go. If only I could do what they did on Star Trek and beam you down. I need Scotty to help me. I'd have you come and sit at my table and cook for you.
You make a mean brisket?
I actually do. I'm a Jewish girl.
They make a mean brisket.
I ate dinner, but like my tummy's grumbling.
Oh, you're so cute. Hey, I like listening to all of you gentlemen discussing things about financial history because I often ask myself, self, was Alexander Hamilton correct? Get rid of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was he talking
right?
about getting
what do
rid
you
of?
Think, Richie?
Richie's not here,
what,
man.
What did Hamilton suggest getting rid of? I'm sorry.
Mark.
Yes, tis I.
Good evening, sir. Alexander Hamilton was always going crazy and screaming at everybody in the Federalist Party as well as the, excuse me, emerging Republican Party with Jefferson. Don't have a centralized banking system.
Oh, you've got
Leave
that
it
one
alone.
Backwards.
Get rid of it. No, Let the free market
that's,
do
no, no, no. That's
magic.
Not Hamilton. That's Jefferson. Hamilton was always
no,
strongly
was
in
Hamilton.
Favor of it. Hamilton was, he in fact created the first National Bank of America.
I just looked it up
Jefferson
real quick, Gigi. It says here, why is Alexander Hamilton considered the father of modern banking?
And that's why. Yeah, you've got the two backwards.
Oh, I inverted the names. You're yep. correct. Please excuse me. I stand corrected. I got all mixed up.
It's okay.
Yeah, same
what, you're
battle,
human?
Wrong sides.
You're human? Wow, I would have never guessed that, Gigi.
Oh, listen, you've heard me for years on the show. If I make a mistake, I have no problem admitting it. That is how I constantly learn, and there's no shame in saying I made a mistake.
And way
this
too many people.
Being an adult.
Yeah, way too many people have not learned that lesson, in my opinion, on
well,
planet
I'm
Earth.
I'm still learning it on a weekly basis. But I have a question, gentlemen.
All right.
Because you guys know, and all the listeners out there know, I'm very fond of international relations. So I heard several times this past week the current political leader of the Irish Free Republic. I don't know the gentleman's name. He was previously a practicing physician. His mother is Irish. His father is Indian. And he's the first openly gay elected politician to head Ireland. And he is resigning. And a new leader is going to be replacing him very soon from a very conservative political party. What happened? Why is this gentleman resigning?
You tell me. I don't keep up on this stuff.
No, I don't know. I was hoping one of you gentlemen could fill me in.
Oh, I've long since given up on Europe.
Well,
I don't pay attention to what they do because nothing that they do is remotely headed in the right direction.
Well,
so
he was so progressive with so many wonderful, open-minded ideas. economically, socially, politically, and now he is walking away. Something happened.
From I don't know the answer. All I can do is glean from, you know, what's been reported in the news, and well, who knows how accurate that is. This from Al Jazeera. Northern Ireland leader Jeffrey Donaldson resigns after police charges.
Oh, no, that's Northern Ireland. I'm talking about the Irish Free State, Northern Ireland. That old fart, he got caught with sex scandals. I don't give a damn who he's sleeping with or what he's doing. That ain't my business.
This is Jerome calling from which Carolina? East Carolina?
Charleston, South Carolina. Excuse me.
All right, welcome. You're on the air. What's on your mind, Jerome?
Your Eminence. Hey,
hey, look, we're not the ones that go call our doc the Mega Doc.
Ooh.
I'm just
in
saying.
In honor of Easter being tomorrow, Your Eminence.
You gonna lay some eggs on us?
No, I'm gonna be sitting at home, man. I don't get involved in it. I'm too old to be chasing eggs around. I gotta take care of my own eggs, if you know what I mean.
Here comes Peter Cottontail.
I'm hoping you're talking about your children.
I don't have any children.
Okay.
No one wants me.
I think he might be talking about his huevos.
Yeah. Yes.
That was like that's like my Spanish. Favorite song when I was growing up. One of my favorite songs is Nobody Wants You When You're Down and Out by Bobby Womack. I love that song. So now I'm loving
it. I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah. Nobody wants you when you're down and out. Hey, I love that song. It's one of the. By the way, I need some advice, please.
All right.
Please, 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 give me some advice. Now,
don't take the brown acid.
Abandon the Democratic Party.
There you go. Two pieces of advice.
Never, never, never. Not happening. Hey, I need some advice now. Trump he's selling Bibles for $60, and he's selling these cornball looking sneakers for like $400.
That's not amazing. Like, they are so ridiculous. We'll make them gold, but with an American flag on them.
I guess there's such sneaker collectors that they just don't have a choice. If you're a sneaker collector, you have to have the Trump shoes, I would think.
I have to ask, is there a Trump value pack where you can get both a Bible and a pair of sneakers for one low price?
No, you got
somebody
Trump
advertised
University.
A Trump silver coin on Free Talk Live at one point.
Huh. You got Trump University, you got the Trump steaks, you got the Trump alcohol, you got the shoes, you got the Bible.
Wait, Trump's got his own line of booze?
Did.
I don't know. I'm just making that up.
No, I'm pretty sure he actually did have his own line of like vodkas or something at one point.
Huh. Oh, but I don't drink, so I don't drink. I might drink a beer every now and then, but that's about it.
That's right. I drink enough for all of us.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, that sounds like a personal problem to me. Anywho.
I have a good time.
But he's hawking the Bible. I said, now, you know, you can mess with man, but when you start messing with God, you asking for trouble.
Oh, my gosh. I just had a thought, Jerome. Okay, how... Knowing that Trump is pimping these two different products, right? One, the Bible. Two, these gaudy Trump shoes, right? How could he position both of these products simultaneously with...
And at the same time.
Simultaneously. Thank you, Mark. Yes. That's what simultaneously means. At the same time. And also, like, do it within just one target marketing demographic. He needs to make a partnership with the Jehovah's Witnesses. And so these Jehovah's Witnesses, as they go door to door, knocking and asking you if you have accepted the Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, into your heart. They can wear Trump's shoes and sell his Bibles while they're pimping their own religion door to door. What do you think?
One of my favorite questions they ask him, you know, from the right-wing media, well, what's your favorite Bible verse? Oh, yeah, right. He's got a favorite Bible. You fell for it, huh, suckers? One of my favorite Bible verses is, oh, yeah, right. Sure, sure. Your favorite book. Like, he reads the Bible.
I haven't looked into it, but my guess is that somebody came up to him and said, "Hey, Donald, I'm selling Bibles. What do you think about a Trump branded Bible?" And he's like, "Sure, I'll get behind it and see how many Bibles we can sell." And, you know, I mean, I agree it's laughable, but I mean, do you think it was his idea or do you think it was somebody else's?
I think it's magnanimous of him to share credit with God.
Right.
I mean, that's just so giving of Trump.
Yeah, you know, you've been hanging around with me too long now. See, now you're starting to sound so, you're starting to get the sarcastic bug.
Jerome, you just never listen to what I say. I've never been on this guy's side. I've been saying since day one, the only thing that is different about him is that he's addicted to fame instead of power.
Oh, that sounds right. Another one of my favorite songs. David Bowie, fame.
You know, Jerome, you're entertaining, but man, like, I hope you don't sing for a living.
What? You mean I don't have the vocal? What? Are you having? You don't like my singing?
I'm just saying, don't go beyond.
Sounds better in the shower.
America's Top Idol or whatever?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. No, I was going to say Star Search because Jerome's old.
My mom was a very Christian person and she used to sing. So I'm kind of like channeling her sometimes when I do that.
So hold on, though. You seem to imply that he was going to upset the creator by selling Bibles. And I need you to connect those two.
All I know is, hey, you don't mess with God. You know my favorite things?
Well, hold on. This seems to be the exact opposite of messing with God.
FBI officials stress that any violations of Americans' privacy is incidental, since the FBI didn't intend to violate America's rights.
Oh, like when they said, not wittingly, we don't.
Right. And it was a no-fault error, or millions of no-fault errors, with regards to FISA and spying on Americans. There is no chance that police will adopt the same standard for absolving drunk drivers who did not intend to kill anyone they crashed into. Even when media stars such as Tucker Carlson may have been pulled into the 702 mire, that's the law that they're citing, FISA, the system managed to whitewash itself. The FBI's perpetual crime wave created a hornet's nest on Capitol Hill. Representative Andy Biggs asked, how much longer must we watch the FBI brazenly spy on Americans before we strip it of its unchecked authority? Representative Mike Garcia declared, we need...
How long indeed?
Yeah. We need a pound of flesh, said Mike Garcia. We need to know someone has been fired. Well, I think we need to know that the entire thing has been abolished. And so that's where I stand on that. Yes. In fact, I still believe the FBI is the equivalent of the Gestapo in modern times.
And let's look at what's actually happening. So they utterly targeted one of the presidential candidates, and he's building them a new building. So this is about how accountable they are.
Yeah, or aren't.
Yeah, I mean, they, in an absolutely and utterly unprecedented level, they are targeting a former president of the United States, and yeah, they're not going to get punished for that because they're in charge.
Right. Yeah. Remember, when the government does it, it's fine. When you do it, it's a crime. So.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to note about like the earlier article about these words changing. So there's a real simple fix with this. Use better words. So like, okay, they messed up the word inflation. That's fine. I'm just going to talk about money printing. Now, bear with me. It's a little bit poetic because it's being printed digitally, but it still gets you that idea that there's more dollars than there used to be.
Yep.
So that way you don't get confused about, oh, are you talking about my prices going up? Nope. Just talking about there being more dollars.
I use terminology that makes people look at me funny in my day-to-day life. For example, you know, somebody sees the name printed on, you know, like my debit card when I pay my bill at a restaurant or something like that. And like a savvy wait person will like use whatever name is printed on that to say, oh, thank you, Bob, or whatever it is. Right. And like, you know, nobody calls me that around here. But like I will say things to
them.
Your name. They're like, but it's your name. Right. I'm like, well, it's my slave name. And, like, I usually get a weird look for that, right? And the slave thing, like, they have to think about that for a while. You know, like, it doesn't immediately, some people, like, they'll laugh, they're like, ah, ha, ha, they think it's a joke or whatever, right?
Oh, I guess, I'm not joking.
You know, that kind of thing. So, but I've had people, like, I flew back to Seattle a little more than a year ago to hang out with some old friends, record drums with my friend Steven on one of the songs on my EP, that kind of a thing. And I was hanging out with some people I'd never met before, some friends of his that, you know, he's a new, he had a kid, him and his wife had a kid, and so they're, now they're friends with other people with kids, right? Because when you have kids, you befriend other couples, you can have play dates with your kids or whatever, that kind of crap. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hanging out with, I don't know, three or four different families or something, and, like, somebody is like, you talk funny. but this is simply because I use what I like to call the words of reality, mm-hmm. at least from my perspective.
Yeah.
Right? And so from my perspective, yeah, things like my given name are my slave name. It's my government name. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, and, like, I don't like to acknowledge it because, yeah. you know, why should I?
Well, and people will think you're being hyperbolic about that. But, like, okay, let's look at what exactly it means to be a slave. Okay, well, it means that, number one, you don't get to leave. Number two, you don't get to pick what you're doing. And number three, you don't get paid for what you're doing. Right. Now, let's see if this applies. And, you know, as an addition that's not necessary but helpful to your slavery is when they can, you know, easily sell you to who they want to. So now, as far as that goes, yeah, it's called elections. I get passed on from one leader to the next.
Yeah.
But again, that's helpful but not necessary. But okay, not being allowed to leave. Well, you can't leave without permission. It's this long process called passports, and they can suspend them anytime they feel like.
EU implements ban on unverified self-hosted crypto wallets. So I'll give you guys just a second to stew on that. My first thought is, it's totally unenforceable. How are you going to enforce that?
There is that.
Right? Like, these...
My
these,
first thought is, what do you mean unverified?
Right. I think they mean not attached to a, quote, citizen, unquote, in their database. That's what I think they mean. I've only skimmed this article, so I don't know the...
So anonymous, basically.
That's the idea. Mark?
I don't know.
Okay. Crypto wallets ban. The new EU AML laws target anonymous crypto and cash transactions.
Incidentally, European Union anti-money laundering, for those who don't read this all the time.
Thank you. Targets anonymous crypto and cash transactions, prompting swift changes in the digital currency landscape. The EU is, or has adopted, an effective ban. How can they decide it's been effective before it's been adopted? Anyway, on crypto transactions committed through non-custodial wallets that have not been verified. This measure forms the broader anti-money laundering directives aimed at combating financial crimes. A majority of the European Parliament's leading commission on March 19th approved the decision, and this stand implies a unified stand against anonymous transactions. The regulation targets transactions through self-custody wallets that lack proper identification, encompassing those facilitated by mobile, desktop, or browser applications. The plan is tailored to overcome the gap that enables the anonymous movement of funds, which is a way used to commit crimes. Like,
so I want to.
The dollar's not used to commit crimes every freaking day.
Bloody all of them. Seriously. So I want to kind of demystify this for people who aren't familiar with the technology, okay? So in an ordinary circumstance, you might be spending money on your credit card.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, you have to provide a certain set of information in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So that information is the credit card number, the little number on the back, your expiration date, and maybe, if they're really checking their boxes, what address your is attached to it, right? Okay, so,
or a zip code if you're plugging it in online.
Right, so in the same way, you have a similar thing with cryptocurrency, except all of that information is either this really complicated set of numbers and letters, or this what's called a mnemonic, which is a set of 12 or so words in the right order. Now, if you have those 12 or so words in the right order, it's the same idea of having all the information on your credit card in that you can just spend that money. Now, here's where things get a little bit different between the two. Now, with mine, I have this, you know, this seed phrase, as we call it, the 12 words. And because I have that, I can just spend it. Now, with a credit card, if you give this information out, then it has to get verified by this third party. So now the difference between a self-custody or non-custodial wallet, which for the record is the stupidest possible term for this, because your wallet goes in your pocket, which is why it's different from your account.
Right.
So a custodial wallet or account, which would be the actual non-Orwellian phrase for this, is where someone else, say Coinbase, has the 12 words that let him spend all of this money, and they made a promise to you to only do it when you tell them to. So that's the difference right there.
Right. I think the best way to describe it is with a custodial wallet, somebody else has custody of your wallet. And here on Free Talk Live, we say, if they're not your keys, they're not your coins, which is to say, if anyone has custody of your wallet, they have your wallet.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like there's extra terminology in there just because.
The Bitcoin was made so that you have control of your money. And then the majority of people who have Bitcoin now give somebody else control of their money. Somebody like Sam Bankman-Fried, who is going to do whatever he wants with your money, and did.
Yeah. And it is profoundly ironic that the biggest thing in cryptocurrency nowadays is the very thing that negates the idea, because ETFs being approved means exactly the thing we were trying to avoid with it, with the technology. Like, it's literally like, I invented a car. Ah, I will allow you to release that into the market as soon as you take the wheels off.
Right.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.